with a southern style of cooking catfish, chicken, and shrimp, featuring the Seaboat Sandwich, two pieces of fish on a wheat bun with lettuce, tomato, and tartar sauce, and desserts like sweet potato pie. The Seaboat at Bradley and Market in Champaign. Delivery and catering services at 351-6209.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. A very quick mention that tomorrow morning on the show we'll be featuring a couple of archive interviews from earlier this fall, both of them with writers who are visiting the campus. In the first hour, a show from October, conversation with Alexander Heyman, a writer who now makes his home in Chicago but grew up in Sarajevo. And a lot of his writing has to do with the experiences of being dislocated from the place that he grew up and relocating in the United States. Then in the second hour, the guest is Douglas Glover. He was here earlier this month. He's a writer. He's a critic. He teaches at Vermont College, is Canadian-born, but now lives in the United States. And so some conversation with a couple of novelists tomorrow morning in the 10 and 11 o'clock hour. We're generally here weekday mornings from 10 to noon, 10 different topics for you every week, and we always welcome your questions and comments. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be looking at our attitudes about growing older. But our guest for the program is Dr. William Thomas. He's a physician. He's an authority on geriatric medicine and elder care. And he's the author of a book that we'll be talking about that's come out recently. The title of his book is What Are Old People For? How Elders Will Save the World. The book, as I say, takes a look at our attitudes on aging. And in the book, he makes the observation that that every day across this country, great numbers of people, they look at themselves in the mirror. And they look for signs of aging, and when they find them, they're not happy. They're told, though, that you don't have to put up with that. You don't have to put up with aging. You can fight that. And, of course, people put a great deal of energy into that fight, and sometimes they invest a lot of money. He says, though, that we really have to change completely the way it is that we think about aging, and that the book does that, addresses that in a variety of ways. The book is published by Vanderwijk and Burnham, should be out now in bookstores if you want to take a look at it. Our guest, William Thomas, Dr. William Thomas, currently serves as president of the Center for Growing and Becoming Incorporated. It's a not-for-profit organization. It's dedicated to promoting and developing constructive, holistic approaches to aging and the care of our elders. He's also president of the Eden Alternative. It's a research, consulting, and advocacy group committed to improving the care received by people who live in institutions. He's board certified in family medicine and geriatrics. He's also a consultant for AARP and travels the country talking with groups of academics and healthcare professionals and researchers talking about the issues of aging and the aged, as well as the wise use of medicines. He's talking with us by telephone as we talk. You're certainly welcome. People who are listening are certainly welcome to call in with questions or comments. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, Dr. Thomas, hello.
Hey, glad to be with you, David.
Well, thanks for talking to us. We certainly appreciate it. At one point in the book, you were writing that something like, as I am writing this, I'm not sure what the title of the book ultimately will be.
Right.
And you said that you, in particular, your publisher said, you know, we'd really rather that you not use the word like elder or
right.
elder care in the title. Obviously, they somehow felt that if people saw that book on the shelf, they'd say, well, I don't want to read that. And then you ended up settling on this title, which is a kind of a variation on a theme of a rather well-known writer, a fellow named Wendell Berry, who wrote this book titled What Are People For?
Yeah.
So, and you were, I guess, were kind of inspired by that and put a little twist on it and so wrote this book. So you've titled it What Are Old People For? What are you getting at there?
Well, you know, it's a question that a lot of people think is kind of strange when they first hear it. When they hear, what are old people for? Some people are even kind of embarrassed by the question because underneath the surface, society's unspoken answer to that question is not very much. And our society really discounts old age and older people in a quite a brutal way when you get down to it. So the book is actually meant to raise that issue to the surface and actually to challenge this mistaken notion that old age is a is a purely negative thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's interesting. Obviously, there are many directions from which you can approach that question. One way that I think is kind of interesting does have to do with the questions coming out of evolutionary biology.
Right.
If you assume that the main purpose of any species is to replicate itself, mm-hmm. then you have to ask this question, what's the purpose then of having individuals survive past their reproductive years? Because at that point, they're not making new babies. So you might in one sense say, well, what is the point of having older individuals, no matter whether you're talking about human beings or wolves or whatever, if they're past the point they can reproduce, then why does nature keep them around?
That actually is a foundational question. It's a really important question. And one thing I point out to audiences when I'm speaking at universities is that if you look at it, there's really only one species on Earth in which individuals are likely, indeed quite likely, to survive past their childbearing years, and that's the human species. One species on Earth. And it's really an astonishing accomplishment. And one thing I point out to people is that when you talk about human aging, you can talk about some of the problems posed by aging, but the much bigger point is human beings are the masters of aging. We age better than any other creature on Earth. And if you look at it that way, our ability to grow old is really central to our humanity.
Hmm. Talk about that a little bit more. What you mean by that?
Well, we wouldn't be human if we couldn't grow old. Now, look at it this way. Everywhere around the globe and all through history, human beings have made up multi-generational social systems with youth, with vigorous adults, and with elders who are past childbearing years. I don't care where you want to take me. You can take me to the outback of Australia, the Kalahari Desert, Northern Europe, any place you want to take me. I can show you this three-part social structure. But if we go and look at lions and zebras and giraffes and bears, any other kind of mammal you want to talk about, they only have a two-generation social structure. And it's this three-generation social structure that allows us to build these wonderfully complex cultures that are so distinctively human.
So that would suggest that one of the problems attached to how it is that we think about aging has nothing really to do with aging. It has to do with the fact that particularly in the industrialized world, there are other places where it still remains, but in the industrialized world, we've got away from this idea of the multi-generational family, and I suppose it has to do with mobility and some other sorts of social factors that are connected and yet are issues that are different from simply the attitude we have about getting older.
Yeah, you're quite right to make this distinction. I'm lucky enough to travel pretty extensively around the world talking about aging issues and so on and so forth. And one thing that's clear is that the experience that older people have in industrial societies is different than the experience older people have in traditional societies. But here's what I mean. You're much more likely to live to an old age in an industrial society than in a tribal society.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get there, you're much less likely to live your days in receiving honor and respect and dignity as you're due. So ironically, industrial society helps us live longer, even as industrial society robs old age of some of its most important meanings.
There, and I guess that then again, that gets us to another big and very basic question about why it is that we have so come to denigrate age and rob from age the respect that through so much of human history that we have given it. And in fact, in some places, we're still doing that. I mean, this seems, again, to be something that we tend to see more in the industrialized world than in the rest of the world.
Well, actually, I was puzzled by that question for quite a while, and I didn't get a grip on it, and really until I turned it around the other way, and I asked the opposite question: why do we worship youth so? Because that's really the other side of that equation. Why do we suppose that youth is perfect, and that everything that follows that pinnacle of youth is decline? And I actually reviewed some of the basic research in the field of aging, and many of the authors of scientific papers on the subjects agree that real human aging starts at about the age 28. So if we have any 29-year-old listeners out there right now...
They're over the hill.
You are over the hill. And now, I'll add one more comment. Congratulations. Because once you turned 29, you started on the most exciting journey of human development that we could possibly hope for. Far more exciting than reaching adulthood is the process of reaching old age.
I'll tell you what, we have a caller, and rather than make that person wait, we'll get to them.
Yeah,
and
let's talk.
Of course, we'll continue. We have a lot of things that we can talk about. And probably it would be good for me to reintroduce our guest for this hour, Dr. William Thomas. He is a physician. He's board certified in family medicine and geriatrics. He makes his home in upstate New York. He serves as medical director for the Loretto Nursing Facility and is assistant clinical professor in family medicine for Upstate Medical Center. He's the author of the book, What Are Old People For? How Elders Will Save the World. The publisher on this book is Vanderwijk and Burnham. You should be able to find it in a bookstore. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We'll call her here in Champaign to talk with on our line one. Hello.
Hello, David. I was so clear when I first called what I was going to ask about. as a person who's over the hill and then some, I was in a conversation recently with 17-year-old who was quite openly and honestly expressing the opinion that older people were disgusting.
Uh-huh, right.
And I think part of the conversation about older people is confused by what we mean by that term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for my daughter who's 11, older people is anybody who's older than 16. Well,
right.
You know, and that's hip, and everything else is old age and dinosauric and so forth. But one of the questions that I have is, how do we define those? Does it make any difference on how we define old age?
Oh, that's a great question. I could clue you in on some really interesting research. You really hit on it when you were talking about your daughter. The older you are, the older you suppose that old age is. So, like you say, you ask an 11-year-old, and you'll find out that high school seniors are pretty geriatric. But if you ask a 60-year-old, they'll say that 72 is old. If you ask a 72-year-old, they'll say that 80 is old. And so what people tend to do is move the defining point of old age out ahead of them, wherever they are. And the reason they do that is because such a strong stigma is attached to old age. Now, just for a minute, I want you to suppose for a minute that you lived in a society where when you peered into the mirror in the morning and you saw a new wrinkle, you were delighted, and you thought, oh, this is great! And the reason you were delighted is because having a face with character is a sign of integrity, of experience, and of worthiness. And that having a flat face without features, blank face, without any evidence of having lived a life, was a sign of inexperience and being uninformed about the true nature of life. If you can imagine that, you can imagine a different attitude toward when old age begins. People would be wanting it to come along sooner.
Well, I think this is a fascinating discussion, and I'll hang up and listen, but thank you very much.
Well, glad to have you.
Other people are certainly welcome to call with questions, comments, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I want to have you talk a little bit about the basic idea that I think a lot of people have, that once you get past the peak, where that is, say it's 28, or maybe you think it's 50, or you know, people can pick up that what old age involves is an inescapable decline. This is sort of the declinist way of thinking about it. The idea that you know, what's going to happen is it's slow but it's steady. Stuff's going to stop working. Stuff's going to break down. You're not going to be as acute, as sharp mentally as you were, and your hearing's not going to be so good, and you know, eventually you're just slowly going to crumble until the day that you die, and that's something that's just sort of inevitable, unescapable. It's a natural process, so you might as well forget doing anything about it.
Well, I mean, that the message that you just sort of sketched out there is one that's repeated in hundreds of millions of advertisements every single day. I would challenge an American to go through a day without being exposed to that very message every day. It's everywhere. Now, here's where I agree and here's where I disagree. It's true, your body changes as you age. I mean, I'm a geriatrician and a physician who cares for older people. I can tell you a lot about how the body changes with old age. But that's not the only thing that's true. So, if you mind me, I'll tell you a little bit about a piece of research that looked at the mental faculties of young people and old people. A researcher took a group of young people and a group of old people and showed them a sequence of images on a screen and asked them to tell whether or not there was a pattern in the images. And the young people were better than the old people at telling when there was a pattern. In a way, their minds jumped ahead faster than the old people's. And you might think that was the end of the story, but it goes on, because what they also found is that the old people were better at telling when there wasn't a pattern. In other words, the quick mind of the young person would fool them sometimes into thinking there was something there when it wasn't. The, quote, slower mind of the old person was less likely to be fooled.
Hmm.
Now, that research didn't wind up on the front page of USA Today. You didn't read a headline saying, older people less likely to get fooled than younger people. You know, you didn't read any of that because it doesn't fit into the stereotype that we carry around in our society. And there's a fascinating Swede who actually believes, he's published research that suggests that old age is a time of very, very profound development in the minds and brains of older people, and that we miss it mostly because we don't look for it.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting point, and I guess it gets at, again, this idea of how we think about aging in this business of decline, mm-hmm. is that it may indeed be true that there are some trade-offs that perhaps, you know, when you're 70, 80, 90, you're not going to have the physical stamina that you did when you were younger. You might not be as strong physically. You know, that perhaps some things might not work quite as well.
Right.
And yet the trade-off, it does have something to do with those parts of human experience that are more difficult to quantify, and that have to do with accumulating a lifetime of experience. They have to do with judgment, with insight, with imagination. It does indeed have to do with how we think, what we think about. So maybe that's where you see, that's where your trade-off is. Yeah, you can't lift as much weight as you once could. But if you're lucky, you might be more wise than you were when you were 18 years old. And I don't know, maybe for some people they won't take that trade, but that indeed seems to be the trade.
That's it exactly. And so at this in the title of the book there, it says how elders will save the world. You notice I didn't say how old people will save the world. Old people may or may not save the world. I don't know. But elders are a different kind of species, in a sense, than just old people. Elders are people who take on old age and drink from that cup, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They take that cup of aging and they drink it, and they take it into themselves, and they become elders, which is something different than simply becoming old. Elderhood, in many cultures through history, elderhood has been understood as a period of life following adulthood. And just that sentence alone is enough to get me in trouble with some of your listeners, because there are a lot of people who believe that adulthood never ends, that there's never any, there is no end point to adulthood. Once you reach adulthood, you remain an adult forever. And I don't think that's true. I think there is a developmental phase that follows adulthood, and that we need to learn a lot more about it.
Let's talk with someone else. We have someone here on
a
cell phone on our toll-free line, our line four. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. Enjoying the discussion today. Since I'm calling from a cell phone, I'll make a few comments, hang up, and listen. I actually make my living servicing nursing homes.
Wow.
So this topic is right on target for me. And just a real cute anecdote where your guest mentioned when the people get older, they always kind of up the target as to what's truly old. And we had a lady here in the community who made quite a sizable donation to our hospital. And I went out to see her, and I said, well, how you doing, Bertha? And she said, well, okay, but, you know, I'm getting old. And at the time, she was 106.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess it's all relative. But just a couple of comments. First, I'm 50, and I have two small children. And recently, my 9-year-old came home, and the class project was to interview grandma and grandpa about their life experiences.
Yes.
And I just thought that was wonderful. I consider the elderly an untapped resource. I really do, as far as experiences and what they can share. The other side of that is, and I don't mean to bite the hand that's currently feeding me, but overall, the nursing home system in this country is very disappointing, because to me it's almost tantamount to warehousing people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you put these old people away, and very few family members come, per se, and they're hungry for attention. And, you know, I do think it speaks to our society where the glorification of youth, whatever that means, and once you get to a certain point and you're discarded, you know, you're basically warehoused until you die. I will say, as far as getting older, and I'll just speak for myself, people in their 20s, you know, you're searching. You're searching for a mate. You're searching for a career. You're searching for a life goal. And it's very unsettling. And once you get older and you hopefully attain those things, you really can sit back more or less and really enjoy your life more so than you ever have, because, you know, you reach these things, you start to see the light for the forest for the trees, and you don't have to search for, you know, all these things that the ads and the society and the advertisement is really geared towards the 20-somethings, and this is my point of view, you know, the movies and so on and so forth, and these kids are on a dead run trying to find themselves, and I just think it's exhausting. So I think there's a lot for, you know, the attainment of older age. You turn on the TV now, and these shows where these teenage kids are going under the knife for plastic surgery, it's just completely wrong-headed to me. You know, they're throwing their youth away to attain something that they don't have in the first place. And, you know, I just think it's a disappointment. So I applaud your guest, and hopefully at some point maybe our society can take advantage of the resource that is older age. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for the comments. There's probably a lot there you might want to respond to.
Wow. That was packed. Lots of interesting things. If I'm not mistaken, the caller was saying that he's in 50 and has a 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks to something that's very important in our society, which is a relative shift in childbearing, where more and more people are having children at a later time in life. And that in itself is changing our perception of aging. So, for example, in my family situation, my parents were 20 years old when they had me, and I was a medical doctor by the time they were in their mid-40s, you know. He's in a situation where he's going to experience life differently than my parents did because he has younger children at an older age. That's important. Second, I wish I could have done it as well. Describe this perspective that age brings. This being able to see things that you couldn't see when you were 20. And I would submit to the caller that if he maintains this attitude when he's 80, he's going to say many things he cannot see when he's 50. Hmm. And that's the true gift of aging. And the last thing, if I can, do you mind, Dave?
Sure. No, go ahead.
The nursing home story. You know, we've been very active in trying to do the best we can to make America's nursing homes be the best they can. And our work is really built around something called the Eden Alternative. And I think America can do better with its long-term care. And that's part of the equation of doing something about the future of aging, is doing something about nursing homes.
Well, that's something I think that people frequently point to, point out the fact that the baby boom generation is getting older, and that sometime in the not-too-distant future, we're going to have a very significant percentage of the population in the older age cohorts. And these people, they are going to need medical care. They may have some special needs when it comes to housing. Mm-hmm. And that I think that there are some people like you who are in this field are pointing out the fact that we should now be getting ready for this to meet those needs, and that we're not doing it.
Right. We are in denial. Oh. We are in such major denial. It's pretty unbelievable. The denial is on a couple of levels. One, 10 years ago, there was something called the White House Conference on Aging. This is 10 years ago. And if you go back and you read some of the stuff that was written at the time, it was about how, you know, now is the time for action. America is aging. We need to prepare now. 10 years have gone by. They're getting ready for another White House conference on aging, and they're saying, now is the time for action. And if they keep doing that, the boomers will finally, you know, it'll all be there. I mean, and nothing will have happened. But so we're in denial on that level. But there's another interesting kind of denial that our society is focused on, and that's the idea that there's nothing we can do. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is because I think there's loads that we can do. And if I were to put up front the first thing that I think we should do is to train ourselves to see the aging of America as a blessing, not a curse.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here, and I have another caller I'll get right to just as soon as I reintroduce our guest for the benefit of anybody who might have tuned in here. Dr. William Thomas, he is a physician. He's board certified in family medicine and geriatrics. He makes his home in upstate New York, where he serves as the medical director for the Loretto Nursing Facility. He's also assistant clinical professor in family medicine for Upstate Medical Center. He's a consultant for AARP and travels around the country giving talks to academics and healthcare professionals looking at the issues of aging and also the use of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
He is and indeed also president of the Center for Growing and Becoming Incorporated. That's a not-for-profit organization that's interested in promoting and developing constructive, holistic approaches to aging and the care of elders. He's also president of the Eden Alternative. That's a research, consulting, and advocacy group committed to improving the care received by people who live in institutions, and is the author of the book What Are Old People For? How Elders Will Save the World. The book is published by Vanderwijk and Burnham and should be in bookstores now. We have somebody else here who has a question who would like to get into the conversation in Champaign, and it's line number one. Hello.
Yes, I'm a scholar of East Asia, and I've noticed an attitude, incredible difference of attitude toward those who are elders between American culture and cultures of East Asia, especially, for example, Japan, which I study. And what I've noticed is that there is a tremendous respect historically and in contemporary East Asia for people who've come before us, whether they come before us in our workplace, in school, or there are elders physically, and in connection with that, and I think this is related to these being Confucian and Buddhist societies,
that they
really, really hesitate before putting a parent or a loved one in a home. That's one thing that I've noticed, and there is, of course, hesitation with many people here, but it's extreme there, and it's very difficult, and you're often expected to take care of your parent in your home, which, of course, is a complex social situation. Nevertheless, there's great respect for those who are elder, and also something in that connection is I think that we associate being elder with being close to death.
Right.
And I think it's symptomatic of virtually our entire society's anxiety about death itself. And because when you die in the States, basically you're forgotten. I mean, I don't mean to be unfair, but you basically have Memorial Day. And people have this one day in which they attend to the dead. In Japan, for example, and this would be true throughout East Asia, you die. Then on the first anniversary, there's a memorial service. Everyone comes. Cousins come, others. Third year, seventh year, 13th year. 23rd year, 33rd year, 50th, and most commonly up to the 100th year. So that means you're not forgotten. And I tell my students this, and they're just in shock because they don't want to hear about death, because I think it scares them. But being elder, I think, is treated as if, like, oh, you're one step away from being dead. It's like having cancer from the perspective of certain people. And I find it very, very sad. And the one interesting aspect is, though, that, as you were saying, demographically, we're aging radically in this society, you know, as well as in East Asia as well. And so all of our societies have to deal with the fact that a large percentage of people are going to be our elders. And I think it's very, very important that we take account of this, even when we think about tax policy. So what happens if you cut all the taxes for the future? We're not talking about our grandchildren so much as we're talking about the elder. They're going to be, and I've seen economists depicting, perhaps by 2010 to 2013, massive perhaps close to homelessness for millions of elderly.
Right.
And this is frightening, and I think it's unconscionable, actually, the attitude of our government and of our society more generally. Again, the government is just symptomatic of the society itself, in a sense. But I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, I'll tell you, I had my opportunity to visit Japan for the first time this summer, and there is no question in the world I know less about Japan than you do. But I did get invited over to Japan to talk to the leaders of long-term care in Japan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And what they're finding, if I may say, is that the falling birth rate and heavy urbanization of their society is creating many situations where families simply are not able to provide care in the home.
Right.
They're really growing, rapidly growing numbers of people who are, they're building nursing homes and they're people moving into nursing homes.
Right.
And I was able to talk with them a little bit about what some of the pitfalls of that are, but my take on it is that even though those trends are playing out, there is a deep and abiding faith in the idea that age has its own virtues, that it's not simply a defective copy of youth, which is kind of the attitude you say we would find here in America. And I was inspired by that. I really enjoyed being with people who had that attitude. And yet, at the same time, the workings of a modern industrial economy are forcing more and more Japanese elders into long-term care situations. The second thing I'd say, trying to get around what you're talking about, is this idea of the social safety net. America's safety net was built in an era of low longevity, high birth rate, and plus, if you had an immigration also. And now we face a future with high longevity and low birth rate. And if you really want to talk about protecting Social Security, protecting Medicare and Medicaid, you have to talk about changing Social Security and changing Medicare and Medicaid. And I say that as a staunch defender of those programs.
Right.
They will not survive unless we reform them intelligently. And I think you pointed to the specter of homelessness for older people. That's not an idle speculation. I mean, that that has basis in fact. Mm-hmm. And the way we avoid it is by reforming our social safety net to mm-hmm. account for the way we live in the 21st century.
Great. Thank you very much.
Right,
enjoyed having you on. Hey, and fantastic that you're studying Japan. I think it's a fascinating culture, and good luck.
Great. Thanks.
Well, thanks
I appreciate
for the call.
That.
We have a couple of other callers here. It's something I'm a little curious about because you have, I think, been able to do some traveling and to talk with people in other countries.
Yeah.
There are, and again, touching this issue of dropping birth rates, there are places where it's even worse, where the birth rate has dropped. Actually, I think this is true. There are places where the birth rate has actually dropped below the replacement rate.
Oh, many, many such places.
And so the there are other places that have an even more serious problem that we may have now. Is there any place that you have seen that you think is really doing a good job, or at least a better job than we?
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny you would ask me that because I just got home on Sunday from a week in Denmark. And Denmark fits the picture that you're talking about. Scandinavian country, high longevity, a low birth rate, and actually they also have relatively low immigration. So the Scandinavians, are sort of further down the road in terms of an aging society than we are, and yet they've put together an approach that really puts the dignity of the older person at the center of the process. I was very impressed by what they've done, and I'm going to be inviting some of the people I met there to come to America and give some lectures, because I think we can all learn a lot about the nature of their commitment to older people. It was really refreshing and exciting, and really enjoyed it being with them. It's America. It's not a question in America of do we have the money. Of course we have the money. We're the richest nation that has ever existed on the face of the earth. We have the money. The question is, what is the priority? And the priority, I believe, should be to create a society where everybody has a chance to live into old age, where children get their immunizations, where adolescents get a good education, where working adults have meaningful, productive work to do. And all of that leads up to a chance to live into old age, which I think is a payoff of an investment for society. And when I look at the aging of America, I see some challenges, but I see far greater benefits.
We have other callers. Let's go to line number two. Callers in Champaign.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have two comments. One is, I don't see anything in American society equal to what happens in tribal societies where the elders instruct and possibly initiate the young. And the other comment, I was interested in the comparison between cancer and the way we don't like to go to nursing homes. A lot of people don't like to visit them. And when my sister had cancer, there were friends that she had had for years who just couldn't come around.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I call to say.
Well, okay. Pretty cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Dave.
I just was going to invite you to respond to that however you'd...
Well, it's funny, interesting that the caller would bring this up, because one of the things I did in the book was took a real look at how aging is lived in other parts of the world. And I became acquainted with a man from the Ivory Coast who grew up in a urban family and was educated in a Roman Catholic school. But his family also made sure that he always returned to his native village, and he also received an education from the elders of that village and was initiated with his peers in that village. So it was a fascinating thing to talk to a man who knew both, kind of being bilingual in a sense. And what he told me is that the saying among his tribal people is that when an elder dies, it is as if a library has burned. And that the loss of an elder is a loss to the whole tribe. because something valuable has passed from them. And that idea actually is quite different than the idea we have in America, where so many elders die in, as the previous caller was saying, in relative anonymity. So one of the things that's happening, if I could point out some crazy stuff to your listeners, one thing that's happening is that people are starting to make up their own ceremonies to acknowledge their own aging. And there's a group that's active all around the country called the Spiritual Eldering Institute. And they help older people kind of pass through adulthood and into elderhood. And it's pretty cool. I like their stuff a lot. And then there's another thing that's going on. And I don't know if we have much time, but I would challenge any listeners who know about this to give a call, because I'd love to hear you talk about it. It's the idea of older women calling themselves crones. That's C-R-O-N-E-S, or crone, or crones. And it's older women sort of taking a hold of that kind of nasty word that refers to a withered old hag, and using that word as a source of pride. My guess is that right now, listening to this radio broadcast, are quite a number of crones. And if you're out there, I'd love to hear from you.
The other thing, just real quick, and that I think that the caller makes the observation, is drawing this parallel between perhaps people's, the way people feel when they have someone close to them, friend, a family member who has cancer, with the tie to going to the nursing home. And my suspicion is that there is something that operates in both cases. That is, that people, they don't want to be around other folks who have cancer, because what is it that you can't help thinking to yourself, this could be me? Well, and I think probably for the same reason, people don't like to go visit the nursing home, because they look at the people there and they look at the, you know, how they're doing, and maybe they're not doing very well. And again, what is it you cannot help thinking? This could be me, and I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, you know, that's the dread. What people dread, and they stay away from. And that's why visitation in nursing homes is as limited as it is. And I don't know any way to fix that, because people stay away from things they dread, and they always will. My thought is, let's get to a better understanding of old age that has a lot less dread in it and a lot more hope in it.
Hmm. To another caller. This is also Champagne, line 3. Hello.
Hello, yes. I was looking at organizations. I know you'd mentioned there's one here called Spiritual Eldering Institute. Are there some other ones? I know you said you work with AARP, and I was just curious if there were some organizations you know that also might specialize in sort of more alternative kinds of things for elderly people. I was just curious along those lines.
A good place to go to find out about that is a website, ElderWeb. ElderWeb.
Oh, okay.
ElderWeb. I think it's .com. ElderWeb.com is that's your home base, in a way, that'll give you a real look at lots of different organizations and ideas and approaches, lots of different alternatives. I think you'll like it if you stop in there. Good place to go.
Now, you operate your own website as well?
We do. We have a website, EdenAlt. That's EdenAlt. .com.
Okay.
And that's also got links, of course. It's the web, right? It's got links to lots of places you might want to go.
Well, I was curious, I don't know, maybe you already mentioned this earlier, as far as, let's say 10 more years out, you know, we haven't really done a whole lot with this, and it becomes more urgent.
Right.
Do you know where we're going to be at as far as then, what the population numbers roughly might be?
I'll tell you, I don't have the exact numbers for 10 years out, but I can give you a couple of other things. In 30 years, there will be twice as many people over 65 as there are today.
Okay.
The group segment in American society, the age group that's growing the fastest in America, is the age group of over 80.
Mm.
People over 80. That's likely to continue, by the way. And we are getting older faster than we think.
Right. Well, very good. I appreciate that.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
take a look at those, too. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Back to another caller. This is also someone in Champaign, but this is line 1. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Crone calling here.
Right! We have a crone calling!
I'm 61. I just turned 2 weeks ago. today, as a matter of fact. No, tomorrow. And on my 50th birthday, a women's group that I belong to, which included women from about the age of 19 to the age of 69, held a croning ceremony for me. Mm-hmm. We were in a circle, and it's a lot of the goddess type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very meaningful. And my sister, who's 12 years older than I, sent me a piece of gold jewelry. And our parents were quite old when they had me. They were just days or a couple months short of their 45th birthdays. So by the time I turned 50, our mother had died. So my sister wrote and said, "Mother gave me gold for my 50th, so I'm giving you gold for yours."
Sweet.
So there are a lot of crones around.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an honor for me to be able to speak with you.
Oh, why? Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call. If you like it, let's say it. We'll go on to another caller here because we're getting sort of short on time. Line number two in Urbana. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm wondering, I tuned in late, maybe you covered this. Do you find that there's a greater respect for elders in cultures and societies that have more of an oral tradition?
Mm. You know, that's a great question. Actually, it points to the fundamentally important role that elders have played, not for 100 years, not for 500 years, but for really thousands of years, is that the oral traditions of pre-literate societies were held in common by the elders of each society, tribal people or culture or society. And one of the unacknowledged revolutions that's gone along with our move to literate society is that it undermines that important function of elderhood. So it's true that societies that don't use writing have a much different role for older people to play than societies that can write their stories down. And it's one of the things we have to figure out in the 21st century is what are old people for in the 21st century? And we've got to figure that out, because if we don't, we're going to have some pretty serious problems ahead of us.
Has your book addressed any of that, or tried to quantify?
Yes, in fact, the last part of the book talks about suggestions for what I think are the world-saving roles that elders can play in the 21st century. For example, I suggest in the book that elders ought to be much more active as peacemakers in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and also in the world. Elders need to tell stories so that we can hear them, because if they don't tell them and we don't hear them, they disappear. And that's a tragic loss for us all.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
yeah.
Thanks. One of the things that I wanted to have you talk a little bit about was the possibility, what you see already in the possibility for people, elders forming networks, groups, families, things that we would call families. Because, again, it's going back to this idea that we don't have, yeah. It's difficult to have the supports that come with extended family anymore because families are so broken up. And one of the problems that often we find with people who get, who become elders is isolation.
Right.
The fact that, you know, it's difficult to live alone, to take care of certain sorts of things. And I'm interested in what you have seen in terms of people, in a sense, creating new families, intentional families, by getting together and, sharing what there is to be shared, both in terms of work and supports and companionship.
Well, you know, that it goes back to, I think, a critical flaw in contemporary society. We face elders with a terrible dilemma, which is either you remain in your home no matter what, or you're taken out of your home, away from your family and community, and placed in a facility of some kind. And rational people facing that choice will try to stay in their home alone till the very bitter end. I'm in the book, I propose a third way,
which is older people electively forming small, intentional households where they come together and set up housekeeping together so that they're not living in a facility or an institution and therefore are not subject to the difficulties that come with being a resident of an institution. And they are not living alone and sometimes being lonely in an isolated dwelling. That, in a sense, that coming together and supporting each other is going to be how we remake the traditional extended family structure in the 21st century. There won't be a lot of elders in the baby boom generation who are going to have a daughter-in-law serving them tea as they sit by the fire in the kitchen with a grandchild on their knee. That not very many people are going to get that. Most people are going to have to make their own intentional arrangements to take the place of the traditional extended family structure.
Well, you know, we're going to have to stop because we've come here to the end of the time with much more to be said. For people who are interested in reading more, I certainly would suggest you looking at the book that I mentioned now a couple of times, What Are Old People For? How Elders Will Save the World, and the publisher is Vanderweek and Burnham, by our guest, Dr. William Thomas. He's board certified in family medicine geriatrics. He makes his home in upstate New York. He serves as medical director for the Loretto Nursing Facility. He's also assistant clinical professor in family medicine for Upstate Medical Center. And Dr. Thomas, I just want to say thanks very much for giving us your time. We appreciate
it. Well, I had a blast.
Very good.
See you next time, David.
All right. Support for the program today comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 14 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on the staff. Tomorrow morning, we'll have a couple of shows from our archive, a conversation with two writers from earlier this fall. In the first hour, Alexander Heyman. We talked with him in October. And then earlier this month, a Canadian-born writer who now works and teaches in the United States. His name is Douglas Glover. So that's tomorrow on our show. We are here weekday mornings, generally speaking, Monday through Friday, two times, 2 hours back-to-back, 10 to noon. And we always encourage you to call in with questions. Right now, we hope you will stay tuned because coming up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll take a look at war through the eyes of an anthropologist. Our guest will be Notre Dame anthropologist Carolyn Nordstrom. She is the author of Shadows of War, Violence, Power, and International Profiteering in the 21st Century. She joins us at 1:06 Central Time. On the Chicago Board of Trade, December wheat trading at 302, unchanged March 312 and a quarter.